Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz and bringing back one of my friends and one of my guys and one of my partners and some stuff. Anthem Blanchard from AnthemVault.com, my gold expert, my Bitcoin expert, my all-around expert. What's up, Anthem?
I am doing great, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing great. So you got, I know you got a lot of exciting things to talk about, so tell us what's going on that's so exciting right now.
We do, we do. We have a lot of excitement right now. We actually formally have open shop, well, we'll soon be open, I should say, for our first drop ship. Coin business. So Hayek Metals is going to be opening up here in May, and so we're really excited about that. And we're also going to be having our Hayek coin, our gold cryptocurrency, actually launched here at the end of the month here, in the beginning of early part of May, it looks like. So really excited about that.
And so what is the Hayek coin? Tell us about it.
Yeah, so Hayek coin is it's like a gold Bitcoin, so to speak. We're actually using Bitcoin to power the Hayek coin. So it's going to basically enable spendable metal. So Anthem Vault client will be able to, in essence, take the metal and be able to spend it ultimately. Yeah, so that's really exciting. So kind of like PayPal to your bank account will be your Hayek coin to your Anthem Vault account.
So now, so I can spend that, and you know, we talked about in the past that you can break it up into slivers and they can be, you can do small quantities and so. So now, but the vendor has to be willing to accept that as well, correct or no?
Well, you could actually have, you could pay someone without them even having an Anthem Vault account open. So it's just like similar to PayPal, where as long as someone has an email address, you basically can send them payment and they can set up an account. That's very, very similar to how we're structuring things here. So, you know, someone will have to open up an Anthem Vault account or actually have to have a Hayek wallet. So there is a distinction that first people will need to open up an Anthem Vault account to get to the spendable gold. And so, you know, that's going to be the process. You know, we're going to continue to make it easier to facilitate the spending of this this gold cryptocurrency, make it easier for people. You know, it's got to pass our mom test ultimately, where my mom's got to be able to understand how to use it. So, you know, we're really, really excited. It's got tons of stuff going on. The whole Bitcoin space and the cryptocurrency space has just gotten red hot in the technology space itself. So, we're really excited over here. We're growing. It's a lot of energy and excitement going on. So. Been a lot of fun.
Yeah, but explain this to me though. So I open up an account and I want to spend some of my gold, right?
Right.
But so right. If I want to send it to American Airlines, will they accept that as payment, or does somebody have to convert that back to dollars for them?
Yeah, someone will. So we are working on a card product that's going to be out. So it'll be a Visa, MasterCard branded card that's tied to your Anthem Vault account. So, you know, that will allow you to actually spend a card. A card-based transaction, you know, using metal from your Anthem Vault account, essentially to facilitate the transaction. So we're working on that kind of product that American Airlines would work with. The neat thing about the Hayek coin, the spendable metal from your Anthem Vault account directly, is that it actually stays in the form of property, because basically what's happening is it's going from gold to intellectual property, and then that intellectual property can basically be redeemed for gold back in Anthem Vault. So I kind of think of it akin to going to a fair, and you buy a bunch of tickets to play a bunch of fair games, and that you can win prizes for the fair games, but the fair doesn't buy and sell the prizes. The only way you can get the prizes is to win the game or by playing the game. So, you know, that's kind of similar to how these crypto tokens work, these Hayek coins. So each Hayek coin represents 1 gram of gold in Anthem Vault's system, and it's redeemable for a gram of gold. So we're basically allowing people to exchange their metal held in Anthem Vault for one of these crypto tokens, or, you know, for multiple crypto tokens, depending on how many grams they have in their account. So, you know, that is the way that it works, basically, in a nutshell. And, you know, so kind of like people don't really understand me. I don't really understand how email works exactly. I don't exactly understand how, you know, website transmission work or, you know, websites show up. I mean, I know a little bit about it, but not very much. But yet I can still use the internet just fine. I can still use my email just fine. So it's that similar concept. I mean, I don't want to get too technical with your listeners because I'm really trying to, you know, just let people know that we're always going to choose the most secure, fastest, and most efficient way to have spendable gold. I mean, we feel really excited because we think that the Bitcoin community is really going to embrace our solution because we are actually using Bitcoin way under the hood in order to facilitate the crypto gold payment. So, you know, most people aren't even, it's going to be invisible to people. I mean, unless they're a super techno geek user person, they're not even going to realize any of that. So
really invisible to guys like me, because I don't, you know, so the bottom line is we're going to be able to now go down to what you've been working on for quite a while and use gold on a much smaller scale. So we don't have to go out and spend, you know, buy an ounce of gold at whatever the current market price is, $1,200 an ounce or whatever it is, and we can buy slivers of that and then spend those slivers as if we would spend anything else, yes?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, a gram of gold, there's 31 grams, and 1 troy ounce of gold. So, you know, basically this is about a 30th of the value. A gram of gold is worth roughly about $40 spot, you know, if you looked at it from the wholesale market standpoint. So, you know, that it makes it really accessible to anyone. I mean, anyone that has $40 basically can, you know, basically exchange that $40, that gram of gold, into a Hayacoin that's then freely spendable to, you know, anyone. And even if they don't have a Hayacoin wallet or an Anthem Vault account that a Hayacoin wallet is associated with, then, you know, it's very simple for them to quickly open up and sign up for an account. And, you know, we've been implementing new, even easier, making the sign-up process even faster. You know, the goal is to, I'd like to get the goal to 30 seconds or under if we can for initial sign-up, make it really, really fast and simple for people. That's the idea.
No, I mean, it's a great sign-up process. I mean, you know, I signed up for it, and I think it's a terrific, easy process. I mean, I love the site. I love what you're doing. So in your eyes, you know, this is your space now, kind of, so to speak, right? So what's the future? And do we switch? Do we end up, does everybody end up having Hayek? Do we become Hayek millionaires?
Well, I think that we are going to live in a world of denationalized money and of choice and currency, like Frederick August Hayek, who's the namesake of our gold cryptocurrency, foresaw back when he wrote about this in the 1970s. So I think that you are going to see a lot of these bank alternative companies. I think you're already seeing it, especially in the lending space with companies like Prosper.com and LendingClub.com. I think you're seeing it in the payments industry, you know, with the Bitcoin, you know, the advent of Bitcoin and the advent of cryptocurrency, and, you know, all of the aspects of being able to have a payment system that clears without having to have a centralized network that traditionally has always needed to have the size of government really to, you know, act as a solution, or, you know, in one way or another. I mean, even when there were private forms of money, you know, typically government ended up getting involved in the mix and ended up taking it over. So what's really, really neat is that having a completely decentralized payment system, which is what Bitcoin invented, just like with Xerox invented the photocopier, Bitcoin invented this decentralized method of exchange. And it's incredibly powerful because it means that, unlike what happened in the last 2008 bailout, where you have, you know, AIG, for example, as a central point of failure for the whole financial system, that there are no longer any central points of failure. So that type of redundancy, it eliminates systemic risk and contagion risk that's associated.
Hold that thought. We're going to talk more about that when we come back from the break, because I want to get some answers, and I can handle the truth. This is the Bubba Show. I am with my friend Anthem Blanchard from AnthemVault.com, also the builder of the new Hayek coin and an advocate of Bitcoin, and he's got some great solutions. We're going to stop out here for a break. We'll be back right after the break with more from Anthem Blanchard. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz hanging out with my friend. I am someone who's brilliant in this space, the cryptocurrency, gold, Bitcoin type space. Anthem Blanchard from AnthemVault.com. And make sure you check out his site and open yourself up an account to see what it's all about. It will be the rage, according to my man. So when we went to the break, we were talking about no more of these crises and things like that. Why does this... I mean, I hate the Fed, first of all. So who listens to me knows that I'm not a Fed fan. Okay. Why does this clear up any potential problems in the future based on the way you see it?
Well, because it decentralizes instead of centralizes. So I just read a Bloomberg article this morning that just talked about this very fact that a lot of the major financial institutions are basically trying to whistleblow in the sense of saying that there's even more centralized risk than there was even back in 2008 because of the nature of the way that the bailouts were set up. So, I mean, it really is just... It's not fixing the problem. It's just providing a band-aid, really. It's not a solution. It's not a permanent solution. It's a temporary fix. And
let me just clear something up. You're talking about now. The way we do it now is only a band-aid fix. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. That's okay. The trillions of dollars that have been printed in order to assume a lot of bad debt, you know, by central banks. It's ultimately not sustainable long term.
Okay, well, I mean, and of course, that's the theory of the of Austrian economics versus Keynesian, where Austrians, they say, well, let's rip the Band-Aid off now and not have a Band-Aid, and let's get it taken care of and meet up. And Keynesians keep trying to add Band-Aids to make it better. But we both know that, I mean, there's flaws in both. So what is to avoid, why would having this space without a centralized currency, why would that be better? Why would that why is it that we could not have another problem if it wasn't centralized? I mean, what's to prevent another major economic problem, though?
Right. So the reason that the government is compelled to offer FDIC insurance and, you know, be able to feel like it has to come in as a last resort player is because the way that the clearing system is structured, that if they don't come in, then the whole system collapses. It's a huge domino effect. It's what's known as counterparty risk in the financial world. So that's the problem. And so if you don't have a situation where you don't have any points of failure, like if you have 1 or 2 or 5% or 10% or 15% or 20% or 40 or 50 or 60 or 70 or 80% market failure, that you're still able to clear transactions, you know, that's the power of what cryptocurrency represents. Because right now, I would argue if you had 5% failure in the financial, in terms of financial institutions, that would be enough to set off systemic risk that central banks around the world would have to feel compelled to come in again and bail out more and just create more and more centralization. So, you know, that's the idea in a basic nutshell.
Okay, so now, I mean, and I get it, and I'm inquisitive myself. Okay, so now, if we do, but what is to prevent, you know, if you take away the FDIC and you take away all the stuff that safeguards people's money when they put it in with an institution, what happens when you have a Mt. Gox that closes down and steals all the money? What happens when you have that happen? Who protects you then when there's nobody, so to speak, watching over the store?
Well, banks can still have private insurance. I mean, this is common in the brokerage community where you'll find brokerage houses that, you know, over-insure over the SIPC limits. So, I mean, I think you'd see private insurers. But Mt. Gox is a classic example. So, I mean, Mt. Gox was by far the biggest Bitcoin exchanger and definitely overinflated the Bitcoin price. Like, why we saw that big price? It was a Ponzi scheme, basically, is what the owner was doing. It was like Countrywide Financial with Angelo Mozzello in the last days, but just Bitcoin version. So, you know, but it was much, much, much bigger at Mt. Gox in terms of the whole Bitcoin community exchangers. That's a perfect example. Mt. Gox failed, but yet Bitcoin itself didn't fail at all. And in fact, right now, it's the hottest space other than biotech from the venture capital community and private equity community, and now getting into the investment banking community. So, You know, that's that actually Mt. Gox is a perfect example of the power of cryptocurrency from, you know, not actually having the systemic risk issue.
Okay, well, but a lot of people got hurt there, and you know, so what? I mean, what's the cause? You know, some of you are smarter than somebody else. I mean, we both know one thing for sure, right? And anytime there's a lot of money involved and a way to get around it, somebody's trying to scam a way through. Would you agree with that?
Well, I don't think always. I wouldn't agree with that always. I mean, I think that there are times when companies add value that they're very large amounts of money, like a Vanguard. I don't think Vanguard is scamming people necessarily.
I'm not thinking about them.
I would say, yeah. I mean, I think people have to have responsibility. I think what's lacking in this world is a lack of personal responsibility, and people are used to the idea of having big, large entities protect them. And, you know, yeah, you have the Bernie Madoffs of the world. You have the Tom Peters of the world, you have scam artists, you have the Refcos of the world, you have the MF Globals of the world. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, the idea of having a nanny state and kind of having a government come in and, you know, or any kind of entity like father, you know, father, Uncle Sam coming in and, you know, protecting everyone is completely unrealistic. And it really is the notion that, you know, Keynesians for sure, and I would say, and to an indirect extent, monetarists too, you know, really end up advocating, you know, more by default from a monetarist standpoint, just by the very nature of having a central bank. But, I mean, I just don't believe in that. I believe in individual responsibility. I believe that that's the way America was really set up, was limited government, and not to have governments coming in or, you know, big, large bureaucratic entities coming in and providing fail-safes.
I could not agree with you more on large government. Again, I look at it from the point of view, and again, I'm not saying that I'm worried about it, but I just, you know, you're more into this space than I am, and, you know, we've seen the volatility in the Bitcoin. We've seen what can happen, and, you know, I'm not accusing Vanguard or anybody, but we know out there are always people, and I'm not saying the major institutions, I'm talking about even guys who are smarter than everybody else, okay, that would you agree with me that a lot of the smartest people in the world are on the wrong side of the law a lot of the time?
I wouldn't agree with that either, actually, because okay. I think most criminals are pretty stupid and short-sighted, because if they were that creative, I mean, to waste all of that energy and time and creativity on doing something that's stealing from other people, which is usually the case for financial crime at the end of the day, I think is really stupid, actually. So I guess I don't agree with that either.
I agree with you that it's stupid, but I mean, we can go back to the real gangster eras, the Al Capone eras. And
well, I guess it's true. I mean, I guess that Bernie Madoff did make it to president of the NASDAQ. So I guess you could, I mean, I don't know if I would call that intelligent. I guess maybe cunning and conniving for sure, and deceptive, definitely sociopathic behavior, you know, absence of a conscience, not being able to tell truth from lies. So, yeah, no, that definitely, I mean, it no doubt that the bigger the money, you know, the bigger, you know, people that are dishonest and fraudsters and scammers, yeah, definitely probably the more sophisticated. But I would still argue that, you know, much, there are a lot of people that have created a lot of value, like the Charles Schwabs of the world. I mean, I guess, you know, the Warren Buffett of the world to an extent, although I know people sometimes debate that to some extent. But I mean, there's no denying that, you know, he's been incredible at amassing amounts of, you know, mass amounts of value in ways that have been legal.
I don't want to get into a debate with you on illegal and illegalities and what people do, but certainly Warren Buffett has not done anything illegal that I know of. But Warren Buffett is a guy that said that he was very against the tax inversion. And what did he do right after he said that? He went out and bought a Canadian company so he could invert taxes. So, you know, yes. and Carl Icahn now uses social media to dump green mail that used to be illegal. But now because of social media, he can do that. So those things are not illegal, but they're certainly on the borderline and not acceptable in my way of life. I mean, you know, I'm a pretty straight up guy. I don't believe in BS. And I don't believe in stealing from anybody. And obviously, Bernie Madoff was a piece of crap thief, and many of them are. But what I'm saying is that my concern is if I trust my money with somebody And, you know, and maybe it has to be that I have to be reeducated. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just, you know, again, I'm asking for my own self, but I have to ask this when we come back from the break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. I'm with my man, Anthem Blanchard, who obviously knows it all. And we're discussing something because I think a lot of these questions come up anyways. And I always love to bring it to the forefront because that's who I am. Make sure you check out TheBubbaShow.org and you can actually get the Anthem's business right from there, AnthemVault.com. We'll be back right after the break. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz.
Let me see what spring is like on.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. I'm hanging out with my friend, my man, one of my partners, Anthem Blanchard from AnthemVault.com. Got a lot of exciting stuff coming up, his new Hayek coin. And we're having a little bit of a disagreement here of good and evil. And so, Anthem, I go again, I'm not looking for a reason, but again, I can take some of the guy, like Bill Gates. I can't find anything evil about him. Now, maybe there is, but there's nothing that I can see on the surface. I can find evil in Warren Buffett, and I can find evil. But again, those aren't the guys I'm talking about. I'm talking about the guys that are truly gangsters. You know, we see it all the time. You mentioned Bernie Madoff. He was a scam artist. Raj Ramdam, or whatever the hell his name was, another scam artist. And obviously, it's going on every day. I mean, there's a million Ponzi schemes that we never hear about, right?
Sure.
And I'm just worried about, you know, I hear about Mt. Gox, and I see the volatility, and I go, well, what's to stop somebody who's smarter than everybody? Now, I mean, the Winklevoss twins, right? They were the ones who developed the Bitcoin. Is that correct?
No, but they have made it more popular, obviously. But no one really knows who made it. I mean, it was 6.5 years ago that the idea was created. I mean, I have no idea. No one really knows. I mean, some people I've heard theories as far as, you know, Google employees that couldn't monetize it because of its nature, felt they couldn't, intelligence agencies to, you know, private groups of programmers to, you know, all kinds of crazy theories. So no one really knows who made it, but, you know, basically the difference is that, yeah, sure, someone like a company within the Bitcoin industry can be criminal, but you actually have the ability, if you want to hold Bitcoin without any company being involved. And that's actually one of the biggest appeals of all to people, because literally it just is a part of the network. It's a part of this ledger. It's a function of the math. And the math can only be changed if, like, over the 50% of the players, like, deem it so. But it's not in their best interest to mess around in negative ways with it, because then it completely devalues the Bitcoin. It's kind of like the basic premise notion of it. So, you know, again, it's the same in the sense that, yeah, if you had your money at any kind of bad criminal or organization that was run by a criminal and they were stealing from you, like Mt. Gox did, or like other, you know, Ponzi schemes do all the time that have nothing to do with Bitcoin, you know, yeah, they're going to lose money likely. You know, unless there's like some big clawback like there was with Bernie Madoff, right, where you still lose money, maybe you're not going to lose all of it. So, you know, I mean, yeah, that is going to happen. But the nice thing is that unlike, let's say, Cyprus, right, and there was a bank in Cyprus in Europe that maybe, you know, was really healthy, but it didn't matter because all of the banks and financial institutions in Cyprus got hit with capital controls, right, where people were only allowed to take out a limited amount of cash out of the bank, irrespective of however healthy or unhealthy that bank was, because the entire national banking system was affected. That's systemic risk in action right there. That is systemic risk in action, because it blankets the entire banking system of, you know, in this case, it was a microcosm, you know, obviously not for the people living on Cyprus, but you know, for the rest of the world it was. But you know, that's the, I mean, that's the perfect example. It's just talking about, you know, the potential of that happening on a global level, because ultimately, you know, that is what happens when you have overly stressed banking systems, that you have the credit system and the payment systems intertwined, and that's how the banking systems operate, and it creates incredible amounts of systemic risk.
And I agree with you. Look, I'm on your side, right? I need to know, because I just need to know, because you know what? You're a specialist in this, and I'm not, and I don't know how many of my listeners are specialists, but I think it's important because, listen, I worry about everybody. You know, I've been screwed by enough people. They call me a pincushion. All right, and that's what I worry about. And I have no problem. And certainly, anything that I would do with you, I would have 100% faith that it's going to be great, because I believe in your smart.
But you shouldn't because it's me. But you shouldn't because it's me. You should because, you know, Anthem Vault is audited. You know,
well, that's what I'm saying, but
that's the key. The key is like Bernie Madoff. I mean, that was like even the simplest thing of, I mean, they weren't even audited by a properly registered auditing company.
They were audited, but they paid off the auditors. And I guarantee you, somebody from the SEC is going to jail someday, too, because this is not over yet.
But my understanding is that they weren't AI, CPA, PCAOB. Like, they just literally manufactured some kind of pretend company. But I mean, I'll have to go back. It's been a while since I've read about that case.
Well, we believe, and I believe that somebody has, so there had to be somebody on the other side to help let him get through with all that, because obviously we know that the checks and balances and the balance didn't balance. But I get it now. So, and it's not, I mean, it's the way you do business. And you know, listen, when I can talk to somebody and I can get my answers, that's what I believe in. So it's your company, it's your business, it's your reputation, it's the other things that you just told me that make me believe in Anthem Vault. See, that's what I'm saying. That's exactly, but I'm talking to you, so I get to believe in the chief executive officer, Anthem Blanchard.
Well, if you're not able to get questions answered properly and documentation, you know, information from a company, and you should be very concerned. I mean, one should be very concerned if they're in that case, and you know, they're entrusting someone else with their money, their value, you know, in any way. I mean, you should understand it as well as you possibly can, you know. And if you don't understand it, at the very least, you should be diversified with where you're putting things, because chances are, if you don't understand it, then some of it will go away. And in one form or another, you know, I mean, it happens to all of us, right? I mean, a lot of times, you know, we don't understand why relative value of something. So, and that relative value goes down, like a stock, right, or an investment or something. So,
absolutely.
You know, it's just basic 101. I mean, I'm not a CFA or a CFP or, you know, anything of that sort, but it's just basic common sense that, you know, I apply to my own life, so my own personal investments.
Right, and that's what we respect about you. That's why we love having you on, because you tell it like it is, and you've got some good ideas. So, all right, so now we're moving to the new Hayek coin, and there's no cap on how many you're going to have yet. Is there ever going to be a cap, you think?
Only as there gold on Earth. I mean, it's just all it is just like, you know, is there a cap on the number of shares in an ETF? Well, I mean, technically, no, right? I mean, you could have an unlimited number of shares, but, you know, practically, you could say the upper limit would be the amount of gold on Earth or discoverable in theory. Not that I think all we're going to have in custody all gold on Earth, of course not. But, you know, that's technically the upper limit. So, I mean, it really, you know, for us, we're using cryptocurrency really in Bitcoin, you know, in one of the primary intents as a register. It's just like a count, just as a county deeds office records ownership of land titles, and we are the same in terms of, but it's not we have created the system of ledger that's like Bitcoin, but basically rides on the rails of Bitcoin. And it enables this very same function like a county deeds office.
Right.
Except the difference is that if the county deeds office, you know, gets hit by a missile or whatever, the gas line leaks and blows up, you know, some unfortunate reason, you know, you might lose all the records. Well, in this case, you know, the ledger is distributed to millions of different computers and different applications. So you'll never lose the transactions, you know, and that's what makes it also so powerful. You know, unlike right now where you have a lot of centralization of data, even if it's cloud, technically, if the database is virtually connected, you have more centralization. So versus this, where with Bitcoin or cryptocurrency, which is what Hayacoin is being powered by, is that you have millions and millions of computers with this ledger, this county deeds office for all the transactions of everything occurring. It's very, very powerful because of that.
I agree. So
very redundant.
I love redundancy. That's good. So as we move into the next century, and as we're moving, obviously, we continue to come up with technology and ways to do things. Is there a time in which you see no central banking?
Yes, definitely. Oh, yeah. I think that that's the future. I mean, I think we're going to see no central banking in the next, you know, in the next century.
Okay. So how does the transition in your eyes take place? And does the government eventually give its blessing to this whole thing?
You know, I think that they already are, kind of. I mean, I think that the military, the U.S. military, has already wargamed this out, and they realize that it's a huge threat to national defense that eventually, you know, with another hyperinflationary episode, with the world, you know, financial systems completely interconnected, that they realize that, you know, that's why it's so important, I think. That's why it's so wonderful that the U.S. has really, you know, allowed, you know, so far been very embracive and very accepting and accommodating of cryptocurrency, you know, through a lot of the U.S. Treasury guidance.
Exactly. But what we're looking at here now is a changing of the guard, you know, going back to, you know, way back to in the Wayback Machine. So in your eyes, and we're going to have to get this question when we get back from the break, but I'm going to give you something to ponder while I'm giving the commercial. But in your eyes, does the system, it accepts it, okay, and we get there. Do we end up, when it's all said and done, with a smaller government? Does government start to go away? Do we start to eliminate because of this? Does this start to solve some of the other problems which are not related at all to currency, but they are related to money? So when we come back from the break, I'm going to give him time to think about this. It was a little bit of a, I kind of had trouble getting the words out of my mouth, but this is Anthem Blanchard from AnthemVault.com, coming out with the new coin, the Hayek, which is exciting. He's always exciting to have on. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz hanging out with my man, my friend, Anthem Blanchard, AnthemVault.com. Coming out with a new product, the Hayek coin, and backed by gold. And he's a big cryptocurrency guy and has all understanding. Okay, so do we end up with smaller government?
I think we do. I think we're already seeing it on the municipal level with services like Airbnb and services like Uber and Lyft, that it's eliminating or the need to have things like taxi commissions or, you know, things that governments, you know, typically had to spend a lot of resources and usually incredibly inefficiently to have to oversee. I think you're going to see more layers get peeled off, and you know, that's ultimately going to be a massive savings to people over time. I mean, it's just going to unlock so much value. I mean, I think it's hard for people to really, any of us to really fully fathom and appreciate just how much wasted value there really is out there and really good money chasing bad debt that will never get fully serviced. So, you know, I think once the faster we have these different solutions, and I look at the global payment solution as being the ultimate solution in terms of not having to rely on, you know, larger and larger and larger and larger entities to, you know, just create more and more and more systemic risk. You know, that's where I think that private enterprise, you're seeing it happen with the sharing economy. I think you're just going to see it accelerate through financial technology industry that we're in at Anthem Vault.
So how do we go about getting smaller government? I mean, look, I hate the post office. I don't dislike postal workers, but I hate the post office. It's a tremendous waste of cash. It's a tremendous waste of money. I mean, when you have a post office for two people, and have to run a building and have a staff, I mean, obviously not very practical. How do we end up making everything smaller, and how does this make it happen, in your opinion?
In my opinion, it's more trade, less regulations, you know, because ultimately one of the big issues is just the lack of clarity in regulation. There really is just such a lack in clarity. There's just so much regulation. There's so many different jurisdictions that, you know, lawmakers are allowed to pass laws they don't even read, which is, I think, borderline criminal. And it creates an environment that makes it really difficult for private enterprise to succeed in. So I think that's the key, is to be able to, you know, have as much competition and as much, you know, private enterprise as possible, and very clear, you know, regulation, and that is as light touch as possible. I mean, I think that's ultimately how we get to smaller and smaller and, you know, less intrusive government.
Okay, so the government has done a pretty crappy job, in my opinion. Okay, you can agree or disagree. You don't have to say, or you don't have to comment. But I think they've done a horrible job throughout this whole crisis. I think the Fed has done a crappy job at trying to manage this whole system. What should they be doing now, in your opinion?
Well, I think that they should be more transparent. I think that the public has a right to know what its government is doing. Even though the government often thinks that, you know, that is not the case, and that, you know, they don't want to frighten people or scare people. You know, I think ultimately it's about looking at, you know, the reality of situations. I mean, I would start with the biggest, and really the unfunded liabilities with, you know, Medicare, Medicaid. I mean, there have to be, you know, different options there. I mean, I don't know if some of that's end of life. I mean, that's a lot of the cost right there. I mean, I've heard some simple kind of creative solutions of like offering a cash back. I mean, it's very, you know, being able to roll back, I think, incentives for businesses to be able to expense insurance. I mean, there's things I think that can be done, but I mean, I'm not an expert, Todd. I mean, I don't know. I'm a CEO of a financial technology company, so I definitely don't have all the answers either. But I think that the market does have most of the answers, and, you know, I think that's why it's important to be able to have an environment where you have competition in markets, and free markets are allowed to be, you know, as free as truly possible.
Now, that's a good thing you just mentioned, free markets. I have said, and I've been on the bandwagon, that the way that the Fed has been involved here, we really haven't had free markets for a while. I think that we've become more socialist and manipulative versus free market and capitalism. What do you think?
I think it's correct to state that so long as there is central banking and legal tender laws whereby you have to pay for debts and court debts and taxes using the legal tender of the nation, which are the U.S. dollar Federal Reserve notes. Anytime you have, it doesn't matter whether it's the Federal Reserve or whether it's the European Central Bank or Bank of Japan or Bank of China or any central bank in the world. It doesn't matter. Anytime you have the central bank and the government is tied to it, therefore by default, you're always going to have collusion there. You're always going to have political pressure. That's just the very essence of human nature. You know, you're always going to have collusion and always going to have a tendency to basically, you know, be the lender of last resort for that nation and for that nation's liabilities. So that's why Hayek came to the realization that he did. I mean, he spent decades and decades of his life, I mean, the better part of, you know, 40, 50 years talking with the Federal Reserve and the Bank of England about setting guidelines for federal, you know, for policy, for central bank policy. And he realized at the end of his, you know, toward the end of his career that it was really futile to do so because, you know, really it was impossible to actually have central bank set guidelines. So, you know, that's you know, I think really an important intrinsic concept to understand, that it doesn't matter, you know, what kind of good intentions there are or what kind of initial structure there is for any kind of central bank, and I would argue private or public central bank, it's always going to get to the point where the currency is going to eventually hyperinflate. It might take hundreds of years in some cases, but you know that currency is going to erode, and you're going to see more and more and more bureaucracy, until to the point where the issue is when you have total government control, you have no price discovery. So if you have no price discovery, then you see massive issues. And I'd say a microcosm of that is California right now, the state of California and water, and you know, seeing how extreme it is. I mean, unless there is some kind of miracle rainfall that happens, which might happen. It has, you know, it's happened before with California droughts, but you know, then there's going to be major, major price dislodgement. And, you know, that's the problem, because you really just had all this government solution, you know, from a municipal standpoint in this case. So, I mean, it's just you see it everywhere. I mean, it's not always, you know, in the mainstream news. It doesn't always make big news headlines, because it's usually not very sexy. You know, it usually has to be something as extreme as the California water drought, or some kind of, you know, boondoggle like the Boston Tunnel or something like that, massive, for people to hear about it, or the Bridge to Nowhere, you know, in Alaska, for people to hear about it. But, I mean, those are just the extreme examples. Right. I'm sure there's thousands and thousands of other, millions of other examples probably out there.
I see this quote: we may end up with over 2,000 cryptocurrencies, and some will be commodity-backed. What's your thought?
I think it's very likely. I think we're going to see thousands, and I think we're just like we see hundreds of thousands of banks and credit unions and equivalent around the globe. I think we're going to see hundreds of thousands of new types of financial technology institutions and new types of financial services institutions, whereby there isn't the effect of bank accounting, where you have the balance sheet risk, whereby if I give you a loan for $10,000 as Anthem Blanchard, it's a liability. But if I give you a loan as Anthem Blanchard Bank for $10,000, it's an asset. You know, same action occurred just in the second case. I have a government granted bank charter. And in the first example, I didn't. So, you know, that's, in my opinion, I think a relic of the past that needs to be updated ultimately. But I don't think that is possible to be updated until we have some sort of, you know, financial calamity, basically, in the system. Because I think ultimately what you're going to see happen is more and more and more stress on the traditional, you know, financial system, that because of all of the credit risk and the amount of leverage ultimately within the system, you know, bad debt ultimately relative to reserve ratio. And I think you're just going to see a natural migration. I think it's going to be somewhat violent in some cases, but a transition over to asset, you know, based forms of exchange.
All right, I got to cut you short. This is Anthem Blanchard, AnthemVault.com. Thank you so much for being here today. You are awesome, as always. Thanks for clearing up all my questions. You bring it to light. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow, same time, same station. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much for being here.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.